You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is
Sesame, take your goddamn shoes off at the mosque in Carta.
Is that one word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that works.
I guess, yeah. Who knows? It works more.
Yeah.
So, apparently, you know, our whole system doesn't work. So, you know.
Oh yes. Yeah. Anyways, to escape from the world right now, let's talk about Ms. Marvel episode 3.
Sure.
Entitled Destined, directed by Mira Menon, who also directed the last episode, written by Freddie Seiborn, A.C. Bradley, and Matthew Chauncey. So, initial thoughts here. What did you think of it?
I liked it a lot. This is my favorite episode so far. Thought it was really good. A good balance between action and the sort of exposition or, you know, a story or whatever.
Yeah.
I liked it. I like how they're building up, you know, her character. Hopefully this will not only be a one season thing. Maybe they're building up to, you know, because right now it seems like you're just kind of building up her sort of her character.
Yeah. Well, she is going to be in the Marvels, so... You know, okay. So, yeah. So I think a lot of this is setting up her, you know, hanging out with Captain Marvel and whatnot in the future.
And Monica.
Monica Rambeau, yeah.
Or what's her name?
Photon.
Yeah, that's right, Photon. I've got no complaints. I liked it.
Yeah. It was my favorite episode so far. I love this series, though. I think it's growing each episode, and I like the way it's going. I know a lot of people don't. They're like, oh, it's too soap opera-y or too teen melodrama or whatever, but of course, there's going to be people complaining about whatever anybody puts on TV anymore. I've just come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Because anything I like or watch, I will find a post on Facebook just complaining about how horrible it is. And how woke it is, or how you know, it's so much different than the comic books or whatever. People just like to be mean and upset about things, and yeah. I don't know. It bothers me sometimes. But But today I went for a nice walk to like clear my head and went for the walk and went down by the by City Hall here in town, and there was two kids standing out there, kids like meaning, you know, like young adults, holding a protest sign in front of the building, or the courthouse, or whatever you want to call it, not City Hall, courthouse, with their nice little sign that said Kanye 2024.
Oh my God.
I came back the other way on my walk, and I asked him. I said, "So is this like a you know, a stunt or a joke, or are you really big fans of Kanye for president in 2024? And they're like, both.
So it's both a joke and...
Okay. Which just boggled my mind and made me, I had to think of that the whole rest of the way home. So
probably just like the stuff that we used to do, like little pranks and shit like that, you know, like probably something like that, you know.
Yeah, they were just standing there getting people, trying to get people to honk their horns.
Yeah.
But whatever, more power to them doing whatever they want, you know. Because in my opinion, you can go out and hold a sign saying whatever you want. I don't care. That's what this country's about. I might not like what you're saying, but I'm just saying that, you know, that's the right you have. It's a lot better. It's a lot better than the racist assholes who were there a month or so ago.
I was going to ask, why did you went to any kind of Nazi rallies or anything like that?
No.
Or... Okay, cool.
It was in the same location, though, where that was.
That's great. Yeah. Maybe they did that on purpose because they knew that was the same place.
Yeah.
That's great.
But anyways, that's a little bit off topic, but I just felt like sharing with our audience. Cool. And you. what goes down in this episode here?
Oh, man. It starts off kind of really, you know, I mean, it starts off literally where it left off. So, like, she's in this house. The, you know, Cameron's there. His mom is, or is it his mom or his aunt? I forgot.
It's his mom.
His mom, you know, just explained to her, you know, well, you know, it starts off in British occupied India in 1942.
Yeah.
Where she, you know, her name is Najma, and a bunch of other people, they're looking for Bengal. And Najma said that the man in the temple said that they needed two of them for this thing to work, to, you know, whatever. And then. We don't really know what.
You know, they were trying to say that there should be two of these Bengals. So
yeah, so they find one on a severed arm of a blue arm, which some people are are saying might be Cree.
Yeah, but
there are gods and goddesses in Hinduism that are blue. So I'm like, well, maybe this was a god, and maybe that's where the god got their power from. You know, kind of thing. I don't know, but like I'm just saying,
and it could be both.
Or maybe the Cree wasn't, or maybe they. Maybe a Kree.
I mean, it's much like with the Eternals, how they were viewed as gods, but
Just be a Kree, but they thought they were god because of all the powers they had or whatever. You know. But anyway, they're like, does it matter if it's from attached to a severed arm? They're like, yeah, it doesn't matter. They said we need two of them, and then Aisha shows up, and she tries on the one, and she gets a little bit of like a power up, but doesn't really last that long, and she's like. Like, did you see that? You know, it's Najma, but Najma wasn't, she was looking the other way. And so she's like, you know, we need to split up, which, you know, you never do in horror movies or anything scary. You don't split up the party. But anyway,
no,
we split up, you go that way, I'll go this way. And we'll, that way we'll, maybe we'll be able to find it as like the whole place is crumbling, you know, underneath them. And that's the last time we see Aisha. You know, so far Aisha has been declared as like this terrible person, such a blight on the family, but you know, when you see her, I mean, she looks like purity of heart. Najma just always looks like she's got some go, like she's devious.
She's
like,
up to something. You know?
I don't mean that. I don't mean that like just her physical. I just mean like just her.
There's a glint in her eye that makes it look
something
like
about her, like her face that just looks like she's got something up her sleeve. Maybe literally, you know, a bangle. I don't know, but like. And so that was the last time I saw Aisha. She disappeared at the partition. My theory is that she already knew about the danger, and she pretty much took the other Bengal because she didn't want to like destroy the Earth. Well, that we're getting too far ahead, but like,
she knew about the danger, and then she went off and she fell in love and had a family,
or whatever, or something.
Kind of like how in Shang-Chi, his mom, you know, was supposed to be really important in this other realm, and so was, you know, his dad and everything, and they fell in love and kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Basically, he went off to be an asshole, and...
yeah. And plus, too, I saw a video recently, I didn't watch all of it, where it actually looks like they're sitting on the tent, standing on the 10 rings inside that cave or whatever they're in, trying to look for the bangle. And there's like a theory of maybe Wen Wu was kind of looking for more power for himself and knew about the bangles or whatever, you know? Like,
yeah.
Which would make sense because the 10 rings, you know, if anyone hadn't seen that, but then again, it's been like a year since it came out, but like almost a year. He was using the 10 rings in a very sort of just mediocre way, like not really exercising their like full potential of what they actually were. So knowing him, he probably wasn't satisfied with only the 10 rings. He probably wanted something else that would give him power too, and probably just use that in a very mundane way and not really reach like their full potential. So that would kind of make sense of kind of sending them. And who knows, maybe he was the one that was causing it to crumble. Like, oh, once they find it, I'll just kill them and I'll take the bangle for myself, you know, type of thing or whatever, you know. Who knows? I'm just saying that it was kind of interesting. Because then again, you know, I mean, he had those 10 rings was like apparently the secret society that ran the entire world, but yet so was Hydra, and yet was so was the other Russian. So apparently there's like three secret societies that control the world history. Okay, I guess, whatever. And anyway, or maybe one of them is like the real controller of the other two, but they don't even know that they've been infiltrated. So maybe it's the 10 rings that controls the other two, or maybe it's Hydra that controls the other two, or maybe it's the other Western one that controls. We don't know, you know.
And there's so many multiverses too, so it could be anything. Who knows?
True, or it could just be an oversight in the writers too. But
never.
So what I'm saying, they're gonna keep track of like 80,000 movies, like and like 400 TV shows. I think at some point it's hard to juggle all of that information and like, oh shit, we made a fuck up here or whatever. Oh, yeah. Like, you know. Anyway, no, so
they would never do that, and nobody's ever done that in the history of any kind of writing or ever.
No, not at all. Like, it's not like they even forgot Will's birthday in Stranger Things.
No, like, no, oh, that shit, never happened.
That was his birthday. Well, we forgot about it. Sorry.
Yep, no. They didn't know that it was March 22nd. But anyways, the
exactly. So we get that scene, and then Najwa's telling Kamala, you know, like what's going on, like who they are, like, and she asked them like, well, you know, what are you, or what should I call you? And they're like, well, we've been called, you know, many different things. She kind of goes through like a list, like the clandestines, the Majnun, the unseen. It's like, but we're mostly called Jin. And she's like, wait, did you say Jin? And then it goes into the credits, like, So technically, Kamala is part Jin, or at least half Jin, or quarter Jin, or whatever. Banished.
In the comics, there is a group of people called the clandestine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one combined word, but it's the D is capitalized in the middle of the word, so it's like clandestine.
Oh, destined, like
yeah.
Interesting. In the episode's called Destined. Interesting.
Yeah. It's just kind of interesting. So, in the comic book world, they're also referred to as the Destines. They're a fictional secret family of long-lived superhumans appearing in Marvel. They were created in 1994. They're an altered villainous version of them appear as basically they're trying to say that this is the basis for the villains in Miss Marvel, the TV series. So, but in the comics, they're like all different types of creatures. One of them is a djinn.
Okay.
So that's interesting. I mean, there's not, you know, it's probably just an appropriation of the name as opposed to being a direct translation of them, because in the comics they're heroes, so
these are just, you know, they said that they were exiled and they want to go back to their Noor dimension, which Noor is Arabic and Urdu for light, and like I don't know if it actually literally means light, like and what they mean for it, but they live, which, you know, I don't think anyone's ever asked why were they exiles, like were they bad or like what, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully that gets explained in a future episode.
I mean, Aisha doesn't seem bad, but maybe there was like a whole group thing where he just punished the entire group, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
Even though, like, kind of like in school when they would punish the whole group if one student was bad, which is totally fucked up. But anyway, you know, it could be something like that. Because, again, like, Aisha, I don't know, I just looked at her and she just looked pure of heart to me. She did not look like a villain at all. Najma, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really... So I'm thinking Najma may have done stuff and then blamed it on Aisha, and that's what led to the stories of her being like this shame on the family.
Possibly, yeah.
I don't know, but I'm just wondering. Because she did say something about later on about being betrayed, but I'm going ahead. I'm not great at chronology these days. I just kind of talk.
Well, that's fine. So basically, what we ended up having, so they have this little thing where they find out what's going on. Yeah, and they also say that the Bengal might be able to help them return, but they need Kamala's help.
Right, because it doesn't really work on them.
Yeah,
because they're actually from this other dimension. Whereas, she even said that Kamran might eventually tap into his own powers at some point, or something will ignite them, or whatever. Because they're kind of half, you know. Well, he is definitely half Jin, whereas Kamala might be like only quarter because of how many ancestors she has.
How many generations it is.
But Kamran might actually have more power than she does technically. Right now, he hasn't really showed any indication. Other than super strength, it seems like they have, as a, like a given, it seems like. They seem like they're just a little bit stronger than regular humans are.
Yeah.
But that just might be just because they are, like, special beings, kind of, you know?
And they haven't aged. I mean, they look like they've been around for 100 years or more, and they look like, you know, young.
So they must be at the same age that they were when they got banished, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, they've never aged, like, a day, you know, really since that time.
But Cameron is actually 17, so...
Well, yeah, because he's the son of...
I'm trying to figure out who's his dad.
I don't know. Yeah, we know his mom. But again, it could have been one of those things where... Maybe she killed her husband. I don't know.
Her type of like, people can just, you know, asexually procreate. I don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, it could be. it's possible. I mean, we don't know. I mean, is there Jin they could do?
Yeah.
And then, anyway, so yeah, she goes home and she's like really excitedly talking to you know Bruno about it, and you know. He's like, what, you didn't text me like 8 hours ago, like let me know you're okay and stuff like that. And then, you know, she drops the Jin card and he's like, oh, I always knew there's something weird about that Kamran, because he's got this sort of competition with Kamran.
Yeah.
Because they both kind of like, you know, Kamala. Mm-hmm. So, and I like that one time when he throws his quip like her, Najma and her average looking son. And like,
yeah.
I want to do a community meme, because there's like a scene in Community where Jeff is like feeling like really insecure about this guy at like the paintball game or whatever, and he's like, he's average, he just has a slightly big chin, you know. Like, yeah. And Troy's like, dude, you have problems. I kind of want to make a meme where I'm just gonna put Jeff Winger's face on top of Bruno's face and then put Troy's face onto Kamala's and be like, dude, you've got problems.
That's funny. Yeah, but,
anyway, yeah, what else is going on here, dude?
So, Bruno looks more into Jin, you know, like, does some research. I guess there's, like, books where you can research this or something. I mean, there probably are.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
There are, yeah.
He's looking into it. He's working at the carryout, or bodega, or whatever you want to call it. The Circle Q, looking it up, and Kamala's dad comes in and buys a Hostess pie that he's not allowed to have. He basically translates some of the stuff that was in either I don't know what language it would be in, if it was in Pakistani or who was it? Okay.
Well, it'd be, that's the language of in Pakistan, but yes.
Urdu, wasn't sure if it was in that or if it was in Indian or something else, you know, but he was able to translate it and explain what they are and stuff and everything. So basically what does he say they are?
Yeah.
What did he say they are?
Well, he basically just told him the same thing that Kamala and Najma told her, that they were banished and they're trying to find like a secret key to bring them back to their world, and pretty much literally the same, you know, story. So Bruno's like, oh yeah, they're definitely telling the truth, like, you know.
Yeah. Then we have the main thrust of this episode is the fact that it's the day of her brother Amir. He's marrying his fiance Taisha. Mm-hmm. So it's their wedding day. So yeah, what goes on with the wedding then?
It's pretty cool. I mean, man, it looked like a really fun wedding. I'd love to go to like a Pakistani wedding if that's like a normal thing.
Yeah.
Because it looked really, 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 really fun. And even the pre-wedding or wedding, I don't know what you'd call it, not shower. What's it called? The day before the wedding where you have like a party. It's like there's a...
It's shower.
Is that what it's called? A wedding shower? Or
yeah.
Whatever. They had a bunch of really cool looking food there and shit. And Kamala was kind of, you know, it was revealed that Kamala's mom, Muniba, that her mom didn't even show up for her wedding, so I don't know what's going on. There must be a backstory for that. I don't know if she disapproved of Yusuf or just didn't feel like coming. I don't know.
I think part of it might just be that she lives in Karachi. And True. It probably costs a lot to travel to the United States from Karachi. That's my guess on it. Yeah.
That's true. Well, I don't know, because they said that they knew each other in Pakistan, though. So I don't know if they'd already gotten married in Pakistan, then moved to America, or then moved to America for...
No, they in the last episode, they talked about the fact that if it wasn't for Captain Kidd, they wouldn't be in love. Meaning they fell in love when they were in Jersey because of Bon Jovi.
Okay, because they said when they first moved there, I just assumed they moved together, but maybe they moved separately and just met each other after they already...
Yeah, I was under the impression that they met in Jersey.
Yeah, because they mentioned Bon Jovi. I mean, then again, you technically you could be... Well, this is the 80s and stuff. And then
she also, I mean, the mom talks about in this episode at one point that she felt really lonely when she moved to the United States.
Yeah.
And not saying that she wouldn't have been lonely if she was married, but what I'm saying is that she said she found her family and all this other and friends and stuff like that. So I'm assuming that happened after she moved to Jersey.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, she did say that Amr was in diapers though at the time. So I don't know. Maybe all this is like...
Did she? I missed that part.
Maybe. Yeah. Cause she said, because her father was, you know, working all the time for very little money, and Amr was in diapers at the time. And then again, this could have been like an extended timeline too. It could not be all at once. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's just that was like a moot point. Just kind of went on and tangent on. But like, and so they had like this pre-wedding cool party with really cool food and shit like that. And apparently, there's this tradition where like you have to hide like the groom's shoes or something, which seemed kind of fun. But they
hit all the shoes, yeah,
not just one pair, and then like Muniba's friends like says something like, oh, it's mother and daughter, it's like the eternal struggle, and then she like pats Kamala like, don't give your mother any trouble, and she's like, oh, me, yeah, you know, kind of thing, and you know, and like, oh yeah, she's no trouble at all. It's like, really, the past two episodes you've given her nothing but grief. but you know,
yeah, exactly,
every action she's taken so far, but you know, in polite company you don't want to, you know, argue or whatever, so you go, oh no, she's a perfect child. Another interesting thing about Kamala, I mean, this is like a personal thing, so like, she reminds me of a friend I had when I was in elementary through high school.
Yeah.
She was not Pakistani, but like, her facial expressions are like so similar to like the little things that Kamala do, like when she'll like kind of scrunch her nose a little bit and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I just thought that was really interesting, you know, like because like it's, I mean, like it's almost like I'm seeing my friend a little bit, like in her, you know. So that's kind of a cool little thing. So the wedding, yeah, the wedding shows the actual wedding. They have this really cool dance number where they do where Bruno's part of it. Yeah. I think Amir's a part of it at one point. I think they're kind of doing like a Bollywood type of, like they might be like reenacting like an actual scene from like a movie or something. I'm not sure. And then, and just right. You know, Kamala asks Bruno to dance. Like, oh my God, we're going to get finally we're going to get like our first, like maybe our sparks moment. I mean, we already had a moment in the first episode where it looked like they might kiss, but then like Bruno kind of like, he like, change the subject or whatever. Yeah. You know? Which is interesting. Just another point here. Like, so like they're all Muslims in this show.
Yeah.
But like they must be like maybe more progressive minded, or maybe they're not so. Like super, super really, because I know just from my time in the Muslim community, like a guy and a girl wouldn't just be like hanging out with each other. Like, especially I don't think Bruno is a Muslim, so that already is an issue where you're like a woman's not allowed to marry a non-Muslim man, which I think is ridiculous, but that's like the rule.
And a lot of religions are like
that. And so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if Bruno comes. Well, because that one, because in episode two, when Nakia is running for the mosque board member, she tells Bruno to work on the converts. So I don't know if that meant that he is also a Muslim, or if it's because
he's white. I don't think it did. I think it just meant that he's just kind of helping with her campaign.
Okay. It's because some of the converts were white, but there were a few black converts in that group too. So I don't know if that was.
That brings up another thing too about Bruno, though. Too is the fact that he does tell Kamala that he got accepted to Caltech. So.
Right. Because he didn't want to tell her at first, because he didn't really wasn't sure if he wanted to go or not, you know, because of. Anyway, so they're about to dance, then Kamran has to ruin it again. Then again, he was doing it to save them, because Najma and the rest of the group were like, all right, we're done asking. We're just going to make her help us get back. Doesn't matter. Because Bruno found out that, like, if they do this, it might cause, like, huge explosions. Like, I don't know if it would just destroy the whole Earth altogether, or just, you know, cleave it in half, you know, whatever. So that's why Kamala, you know, was like not really sure about this, you know, but they're like, we don't care. You know, we want to go back to our dimension or our world. So we're just gonna force her, you know, to help us, which it's kind of weird, because how could you really force her to help you, since the power comes from her and it won't really work for you? So how can you really force her to use her power to help you, since you can't do it yourself?
Like, but they don't care. I mean, and the thing that really is bothersome, like, this is similar to the Eternals, where they don't care if they kill everybody just for progress or to get back to where they want to be.
Yeah, like basically like the Celestials or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I'm just gonna let the Celestial grow out of the Earth and just destroy the entire planet, basically.
Yeah, and then. You know, and then everybody dies, and then we just start from scratch. And that's almost how they feel here. It's like, you know, we don't care if we destroy Earth or even just destroy Jersey City or whatever they're just, you know, destroying. That's gonna
happen. Who knows?
Because they said it's gonna be a big boom. They didn't. He said, I don't know what kind of big boom it's gonna be, but it's like,
yeah, not Najma. You know, she acknowledged that would be dangerous, but she didn't tell Kamran that. So Kamran comes to warn them. So anyway, he's doing a good thing. He's not really trying to.
Well, I don't see him as a bad guy at all. So
he's not trying to like ruin their dance or whatever. He's like, they're gonna kill everyone in this building.
I mean, because right that's like, that's what you need in a good in a good as a writer in a good you know, triangle or you know, lovers, you know, triangle sort of thing, is because you don't want to have there be an obvious bad guy, because then it's just, okay, of course she's gonna end up with this guy, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, he warns them that the group, you know, they enter through the, you know, to the hall. So then Kamala pulls the fire alarm because she's like, I'll distract them. And Bruno's like, is it really that easy? And she's like, just stick to the classics, and pulls the fire alarm.
Yeah.
And then one, apparently someone saw her do it or claimed they saw her do it.
I think her mom saw her.
Maybe. Yeah. So there was like this little earlier moment before the wedding where Amir's kind of having like the wedding jitters, you know, and he's mainly because he's worried about, he's very little money, you know, to like start like a new life kind of thing. It's like $732. And Dad's like, wait, what's that? You know, he's like, that's the amount of money I have in my checking account. $732.47. And his dad's like, oh, I'm surprised you even had that much.
Yeah. I guess in the comics, he's a guy that's not really good with his money. His fiance's family doesn't like that fact about him. They didn't really go into that too depth. They made it more like it was an internal struggle as opposed to somebody putting it on him.
Well, that's what it was, because he was in grad school. So it was more of like he's just studying. You know, he can't make that much money because his job is basically to go to school, you know. You know, because he's probably doing it like, you know, all day, whatever, you know. So he's like, don't worry about that right now. And he does the whole speech about family and courage, that whole, you know, thing, whatever, Marvel thing, you know. And then our superhero thing. And then, so that was kind of a nice moment. Kamala, she kind of witnessed that.
There was a part in the episode where Kamala talks to the Iman.
He's at the wedding party or the pre-wedding, whatever you call it. I can't think of the word. It's not a wedding shower, because that's more of like where you give, but there's a word. Well, I can't think of it. There's literally a word.
Well, there's a bachelor party and a bachelorette party, but that's different.
Yeah, I'm not thinking of that. I'm talking about the pre-night. There's a... whatever. I can't think of it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm just getting sidetracked on these dumb little side issues.
Yeah, he gives her advice, and basically saying that, because she's asking about what Nightlight could do to be viewed as a better person. And this is after, you know, Nakia has basically told her distaste for this new hero and stuff like that.
Right, so we had the best friend.
And how the what's that organization called? The
DODC, Department of Damage Control.
Yeah, they came right into the mosque, didn't take their shoes off and everything.
Oh, exactly. I forgot about that. Yeah, total. So that's so disrespectful to a mosque. You're not supposed to keep your shoes on. And they just walked in like with just so disregard, disdain. And plus, too, the guy told her to be respectful. And we could already see a sort of tension. Like, it's not really good cop, bad cop with them. Like, even like when she was like asking Zoe, like, what race the person was, you could see him like being uncomfortable by these questions. Like, were they Middle Eastern? Were they South Asian?
Yeah.
You know, did they talk with an accent? And you could literally see kind of the like really like stop with these kind of questions. Like, you know, kind of look on his face like.
Yeah. But anyways, so she was, you know, upset about that, told her about that, but anyway, she's talking to the Imam, and he says, she asks, like, what could do to, you know, make people think that they're a good person and stuff, and says, you know, good isn't something that you are, it's something that you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was interesting.
It's good advice.
And it's a very Islamic concept, too. You know, it's about good deeds. It's like no one's like either seen as inherently good or bad. It's you know, what you do with your life kind of thing.
And it's more realistic than in a lot of movies and TV shows when somebody goes to their religious or other type of leader, whether it be a teacher or their, you know, old wise person who basically just flat out, you know, turns things on them and, you know, does things differently. This is more of a, like, thinking person's type of answer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And plus, too, he's also the one that was told them, you know, if they come in next time with the search warrant, to remove their shoes before they walk into the prayer hall. And she just kind of looks at him with like the sort of like grin on her face, like, oh yeah, okay, you know, like I don't give a shit, you Muslim piece of shit or whatever, you know, kind of.
Yeah,
you know, but she's like the white racist of this episode of this series, you know, or whatever.
Maybe,
you know,
or
like,
she's just disrespectful to everybody, who knows, you know.
Yeah, could be. Well, I know, but she was like asking leading questions to Zoe off the bat.
Oh yeah,
asking her if she was Middle Eastern or South Asian. What? Why would there be any indication? Like,
well, you know, maybe like, on the video they saw somebody had brown skin, because I think they probably looked into like Hispanic neighborhoods and stuff too.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So the wedding, you know, goes off without a hitch originally, and then. Yeah, well,
speaking of brown skin, the wedding band had an interesting name. It was Brown Jovi.
Yeah, that's right. I really wish I wanted them to be able to hear him play a song. They
I
didn't
know.
Get to play.
But instead they actually cut to the real version of Living on a Prayer by Brown Jovi. Well,
I tell you what, by the end of this series or season, there better be a performance by Brown Jovi at some point.
I know.
Like, we were robbed of that. Like, you know.
I guess they had to talk John Bon Jovi into letting them use their music and stuff.
Oh, really?
Because he doesn't like to license his music that often.
Yeah.
And the way they convinced it was the fact that the show is about two young kids in Jersey trying to make it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he heard that from them, and he says, yeah, use it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they start playing Living on a Prayer, which is interesting. It's a song choice, you know. Mm-hmm. As these, you know, djinn, you know, start causing problems, you know, and they go into the kitchen, they punch a security guard at first, then I love the scene where she's like, everyone, you need to get out right now, to the chefs, people working in the kitchen. They just kind of look up at her and they go back to work, and then one of the guys just randomly punches one of the chefs. The guy wasn't even in his way or anything. He just punches him just because.
Yeah.
And then the one woman's like, no, absolutely not. And just drops the stuff and walks away.
Nope. I'm done.
I thought that was, I love that. She's like, no, absolutely not. And like drops like the artichokes or whatever she had holding, you know, a box of or whatever. And like they all run away. They had this really cool fights. Sorry, am I dominating the conversation too much?
Oh no, you're good. Don't worry.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Do you want to take a quick break really quick, and then we'll come back and finish this up?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks.
No Outlet Live.
Hey, I'm Jay Remy, host of No Outlet Live. If you're in a podcast that explores any and everything, check us out. We stream anywhere you listen or watch podcasts, or just type No Outlet Live, one word, in your Google search bar to find the show. Live Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Facebook. No Outlet Live, your road to boredom ends here. Do you like Tessa? Do you think this will be a date that can last?
Well, she's not very articulate.
And we are back. So we have this big fight go on between the clandestine people and or djinn, or whatever you want to call them, and from the Noor dimension. Basically Kamala, Cameron, and Bruno are taking them on. And so they, at the end, the DODC agents arrive and capture the clandestines, including Cameron.
I was worried that he died at first when he fell to the floor.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I thought there was blood underneath his head. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Did he just kill off, like, a main character already?
That'd be... scary and stupid on their part, but anyways.
Well, I know, but I was. I'm like, he's a kid. 17, like, we could kill any children now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna kill a 17 year old who looks like he's 30. But
I know. I mean, his character. 17.
I know. I'm joking.
Yeah, he probably is like 30, but
I don't know. But
I don't know either.
But at one point, Nakia sees Kamala using her powers, so we got that to deal with. in a future.
Yeah, probably. She's like, what was that? You know, I kind of think if she had just shut the door or locked it or whatever with, you know, the hardened light or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Hard light.
Yes.
It's like, no, that's not a good name. Hard light.
No. Hardened light.
I wonder how we're going to come.
In college.
Oh, what, hard light? Wow. I wonder how we're going to get to the name Ms. Marvel. I have a theory that at the end, Captain Marvel might show up.
And give it to
and
her.
And then she's going to get the name Ms. Marvel. Because so far, they're like night light, hard light, you know, these neural lights. She's like, no, it doesn't work either. You know, like.
Yeah, because like Nakia earlier on is like at one point says night light. What kind of stupid name is that or whatever.
Yeah, so we're kind of building up the whole like, best friend doesn't know what you really are, but hates you kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So
we're probably going to have every DC or Marvel property at one point.
So we're probably going to have a falling out between Nakia and at least for like the next few episodes. And then,
well, we've only got three more episodes. So
we'll probably have like an episode two where that's going to happen. Then she'll probably come around.
Possibly. Or maybe she just sees things differently because it's her friend.
Yeah, true.
It could be, you know, so.
Well, she was kind of pissed off that they were right in the middle of counting the votes for her election when the EODC walked in and basically upset everyone. And, you know, she won, or thought she won at this point. They didn't count all the votes yet. And she's like, well, prospective member of the Moss Court.
Hopefully there's not a stolen election and then an insurrection. Oh,
no. Yeah, exactly. You know, we don't have like a Trump coup going on where, just find me the ballots, man. Just find me the votes. Nakia is actually Trump in like a disguise, like
rips off his face and
transmogrifying device or something like that.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, I really do how I like how they're portraying Muslims in this show.
Oh yeah,
as like being like a variety of people.
Yeah, they're human. Like, they're not a stereotype. Yeah.
A lot of early shows about Muslims, even ones that were trying to have like a positive spin, it would either one extreme or the other, where it's like Muslims are people who live by the book. They read the Quran every morning, noon, and night. They pray 45,000 times a day. They're like machines almost.
But there's just as much variety in any religion of people. You know what I mean? There's going to be people that are devout Christians and people that aren't. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got like, and the other extreme was like, it was someone who's just like Muslim by name or cultural, but like they had like really no, like just no connection at all to like the community or the mosque. And so like it was, or of course you had like the terrorist stereotype. So pretty much those three like extremes were pretty much like the main, you know, portrayals of Muslims in TV for a really, really, really long time. So now you got this, and you mix it in with the superhero stuff. It's just like a really, really interesting how they're portraying it. Because again, you got like Kamala; she doesn't wear hijab, even though she's 16. Which by that age, you know, you're supposed to be wearing it by puberty if you follow things by like the really more conservative, you know. Yeah. But you know, her friend Nakia, she does wear the hijab, but then she gambles because she did that bet. Well, gambling's forbidden in Islam, so it's like, you know, like there's like this. Again, it's like you got like this like nobody's like everyone's like a sort of like a contradiction in a sense. Like no one's like a one thing, like a one track, you know, thing. Like, you know, her mom doesn't wear hijab, but she, you know, she found her home in the mosque, you know. And you know, I like that because like that was kind of my experience when I was involved in the mosque. I mean, I'm not really that much anymore. Or really at all at this point, but there was a period of time for about 2.5 to 3 years where I was pretty much there all the time, and I would see, you know, that going on. I would see girls or, you know, young women, you know, in college who wore, you know, hijab and like even like wore like, you know, like long dresses and stuff, and some of them would actually be more progressive and liberal minded than the women who didn't wear hijab would actually be more conservative and thought.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like you can't just stereotype people into like,
it's like maybe there's actually a variety of people on this planet.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is because there's actually a term that was invented by a French I'm not going to go on too long of a tangent here, but like there was like a term invented by a French philosopher or or like a political science guy. I don't remember exactly what like his main thing was, but he coined this term that basically meant like Islam centered or whatever it would be in French. And basically it was this idea because he picked up on this too, that like, you know, quote unquote native French people, which even that is a, you know, what makes a native French person? Because yeah. There are people in France who spoke a different language than French, whatever. I'm getting off track. Yeah. Now. Like he basically coined this term where quote unquote native French people, the way that they viewed Muslims was basically like this, like these are people who just like, it's almost like they're machines. Like their religion tells them to do something, so they do it. So like, basically like, if like a Muslim ever did anything bad, they would immediately go, let's go check the Quran to see where they learned this bad behavior from. Whereas they wouldn't do this for any other community. Like if a Christian does something bad, nobody's looking into the Bible. Like, oh, well, let's look at the Bible verse of what made the Christian rob a bank. Like there's no bank robbing verse in the Bible or in the Quran. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of like the whole thing in like society where a minority person does something and they're representing that whole group of people.
Yeah, exactly.
When there's various types of people within that group and people don't understand it, it's like it's like trying to say one tree on Earth represents all trees.
Yeah,
when there are really thousands of different types of trees, you know. So
yeah, that's a really, really good point, Mike. I mean,
yeah.
So that's what I just love about this show is that it's like someone might be religious in some ways and not in others, or someone might be totally cultural about things. And you can't just like say like, oh, well, this person's a religious Muslim and this one's not one. It's like, well, this person might be religious in the sense that they pray a lot, or this person might be religious in the sense that they don't date, whereas they might not pray a lot, whereas the person who does pray a lot might date. And you can't just be like, oh, well, here's a neat box. Anyway, I'm repeating myself. But
and again, there are people like within different religions that don't even necessarily believe in the religion. They just are raised in it and it becomes comfortable for them.
Thing. Yeah, it's a cultural thing. And there are Muslims who actually don't even believe in God.
Yeah.
And but they still practice it culturally. And then, you know, like, well, how could they call themselves a Muslim? It's like, just let people do their thing. Like, mm-hmm. like, fine. Like, so I'm just saying, just a roundabout way of saying, like, I'm really, really impressed of how they've dealt with this in this show. It's very, very, very nuanced, but very fun at the same time. Like,
yeah, not everybody's an automaton who's exactly the same. So,
yeah. So I'm just really, really glad. And I'm not surprised, but I'm kind of disappointed that some Muslims were complaining about the fact of the whole Jin storyline. It's like, come on, guys. Like, this is the Marvel version of Jin. Like, we're not talking version of Jin.
And there's probably fact that there's going to be some kind of explanation, most likely Kree, as to what they are.
Right, because Marvel has its own universe within the universe.
Yeah.
So the Marvel has its own version of Jin that doesn't coincide with pre-Islamic folklore that got into Islam, which again, the Jin concept comes before Islam. So why are you even offended? Because this isn't even an Islamic concept. I mean, it got into Islam, but it came out of paganism. And plus two, none of them mistaken here, it's either in the Quran or in a tradition that there was actually a group of jinn who actually converted to Islam because they were so inspired by Muhammad's preaching that they pretty much just joined the Muslim community as jinn and actually would pray with the Muslims like during prayers. So it's like, if jinn are so evil, well then by definition you're going against your own scripture because it says that a group of them became Muslim. So are you saying that Muslims are bad?
See, the thing is like the negative aspect of that is just it's a headline that sells a story. It's just like I read a story once where some people in like the Nordic countries of this world were upset about Thor.
Oh, okay. So that could just be one of those things. Yeah, like,
it's just
grab a headline.
They're trying to sell a paper, not a paper, but you know what I mean, a website, get clicks. You know, it's clickbait bullshit.
So basically, they did a "we got this covered" kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, which I haven't seen much of that. Have they gotten shut down?
No, they're still around. They just keep.
I haven't seen any of their posts on Facebook anymore at all. Like,
well, I see them all the time, and they tend to recycle. Articles like over and over again, like Yeah. So you'll think it's new, but you're just like, I just saw an article today saying that Jesse L. Martin's leaving The Flash, which was announced months ago.
Yeah.
It's, so it's just.
Didn't we do research on this to find out who owns it and how much money they make and shit that one? Mm-hmm. They make like $500,000 a year. It's probably just one random person who does all this shit too.
Probably.
You know? And it's like, yeah, there you go. They make money off this shit, and we're, you know, struggling with our pocket. Anyway.
But anyways, let's not give them any more time. So anyways, at the end of the episode, Kamala and Bruno escape. And like I said, Nakia had seen Kamala using her powers. And then Sana, her noni, her grandmother, contacts her. Revealing to her that she also saw the vision of a train, insisting that Kamala and is it Muniba? How do you say
Muniba.
Visit her in Karachi. So
that's interesting. So, yeah, because there was a time where she took the bangle and they both held onto it together and they saw this vision of a train, Najma and Kamala for Karachi. Which is interesting, because that could have been the very train that they were talking about in the last episode about how everyone got separated.
Yeah, and I mean, it's with the partition and everything.
So maybe she met Aisha to betray her, and she knows that, because she took the other bangle. Because I have a theory, that's my theory, is that I think Aisha figured out what would happen to the Earth, or at least a town or whatever, if they were to do that. And she was basically like, well, I'd rather live out my life as an exile than like destroy a planet, basically, kind of thing. That's my theory, just by looking at her, the way she looked, and she just looked like pure to me, like sincere, you know. So that's my theory of I think she found the other bangle and just ran off with it, is my thing.
My fear with this though is that we're gonna go to Karachi. Not that I have a problem with that, but that we're gonna leave the safe little atmosphere we created in Jersey City, where we're actually getting to know these people, and I like the kind of slowness of the fact that we're in that city and stuff like that. I guess it would be cool to see different parts of the world that we haven't seen in Marvel in the past, because, you know, Jersey is basically just, you know, New York's toilet. And
that's what they say.
I'm just joking.
That's what they say.
I'm just joking, but yeah.
Well, I agree with you here, because it kind of did that with Moon Knight, and I watched Moon Knight again recently too, and I did watch the third episode again, and I was kind of like, after like I watched it again, I'm like, yeah, it really isn't that great of an episode, actually. There was action in it, but it was like, they had two episodes building up everything in London, and all of a sudden,
and then we leave London and we go to Middle East, and we're like, okay, what, you know?
And then we spend the rest of the series in Egypt, essentially.
Yeah.
Since episode three, yeah. So
I just hope they're not repeating that with this show. That maybe they do end up in Karachi, but we don't need to spend three episodes in Karachi.
Yeah, the whole time in Karachi. At least then, though, we would get at least three episodes instead of two episodes. Which in Moon Knight, we only got two episodes in London, and the rest remaining four.
Yeah,
in Egypt, and, which again, I got nothing against Egypt. It's just that it was
because you know it's like on other shows. Like it would be like if you set up a show like Cheers, for example. You set it up where it's taking place in a bar for the first three or four episodes, and then all of a sudden we're in Karachi.
Exactly. Which I'm not sure operating a bar in Karachi would be very successful.
But I'm just saying, like, we leave that bar in Boston and all of a sudden we're in Karachi for some reason, you know, or somewhere
else.
You might
be able to have like a speakeasy bar.
Yeah.
I don't know, like a legal bar, because I think in the 80s.
But even differently, like, we're not even in a bar anymore. We're just all of a sudden somewhere completely different. Because that's what it would feel like with this, because we've gotten used to being in Jersey City, in the MCU version of Jersey City.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we're just in a different country altogether, you know? Yeah. So
that's where Sam and Diane start a tea shop. And then, that's where Kamala goes in there and orders a tea. So, and you know, and then Diane's wearing a hijab, you know, because she lives like in a Muslim country now. And Sam is, you know, he's serving up his coffee and tea in the cafe or whatever. And We should do a skit about a sketch about that where
yeah.
Sam and Diane moved to Karachi and it's I don't know.
That would be different. Yeah.
But before that though, we do get a thing where Kamala shows up and Muneeb, her mom asks her if she pulled the fire alarm.
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't help you if we don't know what's going on with you, that whole
I think she's in on what's she's kind of guessing what's going on in a way.
From like the
timing bingo. Of everything, like where when you know, it's like, oh, Kamala goes to AvengerCon, this new superhero shows up.
And she talked too about the bangle, said it's junk.
Yeah.
And she looked at it. Then again though, if I were her mom, why wouldn't I have just thrown away the bangle instead of just
or putting locked it up somewhere or something?
You know, so that's TV convenience.
But it's like you got to know that it's you got to have an idea that it's Kamala that is the new superhero, because you know it's like she was at Avengers Con, she was at the festival, she was at the, you know. Just different.
It was dressed as Captain Marvel, which is her favorite character, favorite superhero. She's asking all these questions about, you know, the superhero.
It's always bothered me. I mean, I'm not trying to say that it's TV convenience, but it's always like, you know, you watch all these episodes of Arrow and nobody figured out that it was Oliver or whatever, and you're are you an idiot? You know,
it's like, really, like he wears a hood and like maybe like a little mask and like he's still his voice. Eventually though, they did like a voice changer thing where he would like use like a,
but
so, you know,
but still it's like, come on.
I know 8 seasons. Yeah, I know.
It's like, you know, Superman puts on glasses and now he's Clark Kent. No, really?
Do you remember that there was this great sketch in Saturday Night Live way back in the day?
Oh, the one with Terry Hatcher?
With Superhero Party yet?
Oh, not the Superhero Party one. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, there's a sketch called Superhero Party, which is interesting because it has both DC and Marvel characters in it, which I don't think they cared to know the difference back then. But, like, and they had the twist, though, was that that Lois was actually married to Superman, not Clark, like, you know, so like he's like dressed up in a super, you know,
there was a monologue one time on there with Terry Hatcher back when she was on Lois and Clark, and all the guys in the cast would come up and talk to her and they'd be wearing glasses and she wouldn't recognize them, and then they take the glasses off and she'd be like, oh, it's you, David, you know, sort of thing. And then then at the end, Tim Meadows took off the glasses and she still didn't recognize him. Because it was talking about how little he was used on the show at that point.
So. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Dick Byrne, man.
Yeah. So
then she goes up and she's like, I can't tell you, I'm sorry, or whatever. And she goes to her room and then that's when she gets the call from her grandmother.
Yeah. Who asks her to come to Karachi.
But she wants both her and her mom, which is interesting. Yeah. I'm not sure why she wants her mom to come. But
see, that's why I don't want it to go to Karachi necessarily, because if it's just going to... I mean, I guess it would be cool if it's just her and her mom, but we're not going to have Bruno or Cameron or Nakia or anybody else. Yeah.
Well, maybe they will all come. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, hopefully it's just like one episode, and then we're not going to be getting like the rest of the show there, hopefully, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I am kind of worried about that a little bit too, because it's like, come on, we've got this great world building going on. What about Nakia? Because we got that cool thing going on with the friendship might be somewhat fractured, you know, because she kind of didn't like this new superhero, it seemed like. I mean, she already called her budget Captain Marvel by episode 2, so it's like she already kind of has like some sort of disdain already for her, I guess, for some reason. I'm not sure why, but maybe she just doesn't like superheroes or something.
Or it could be just, you know, that the fact that the DODC was, like, targeting in certain ways the mosque and making things harder for things because of the superhero.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
That's the whole episode right there.
Yeah,
that's
it. Here's a couple of, stray trivia here. the when Amir and Taisha are getting married, an excerpt from of the song Tarabina from the Bollywood film Guru can be heard in the background. Mm-hmm. This song was also previously used in the animated film Planes.
Wow.
Yeah. So Kamala's father discusses the strange appeal of Hostess fruit pies to him. In the 1970s and 80s, Hostess ran a well-known comic book advertising campaign with multiple publishers, including Marvel Comics, that consisted of often silly one-page stories where the superheroes would defeat villains with traps using Hostess baked snack goods as lures, or used as bribes to gain victory.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
So there was just some random things that I thought were interesting.
Well, it technically Kool-Aid, the Kool-Aid guy's a Marvel character. Did you know that?
Well, yeah. Isn't Colonel Sanders too, or something? He's either
I think Santa Claus is.
Yeah, I know Colonel Sanders isn't one of the comic book, you know, franchises.
Which is hilarious because there's a comic strip where Kane the Conqueror is drinking Kool-Aid, or is it lemonade? I think it was out of a Kool-Aid like glass, though.
Yeah,
and he's like, taking over the country makes me thirsty, or something like that. Geez. So now there's a Kool-Aid called Kool-Aid the Conqueror, I guess. If you want to?
Any final thoughts about this episode before we sign off here?
Not really.
Alrighty. Well, I just can't wait until next week because I'm really loving this show. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe, share the show, like it, put up billboards in your town for people to listen to it.
Donate $5,000 to our Patreon.
Or, hey, 5 million even.
Even 5 million, sure. Yeah,
that'd be great.
At the very least, contact Pop-Tarts, do a massive campaign for Kellogg's to have them give Mike and myself a lifetime supply of...
Or Hostess, if you want. I mean, that'd be cool, too. Or Hostess,
yeah, if you want.
Or Kool-Aid, you know, crap.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Kool-Aid. I would rather go with Pop-Tarts or Hostess, but...
Well, if they want to sponsor us, I'm cool with that. I mean, I'll start drinking more Kool-Aid if they sponsor us. But anyways... Until next time, just make sure you share the show with people. That's the easiest way to get us out there. Buy some merch, everything at all2real2.com. And now more than ever, just be good to people. You know, treat people like humans.
Oh, what a concept. Yeah.
that's all I ask. Okay?
Kind of big ask.
I know it is, sadly. but until next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.